Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America, and happy Wednesday in America. Yes, it's good to be joining you here at John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Today, we're going to take a break from Afghanistan. I know you're like, why? Well, because there's a lot of other things going on in the world. We don't want to take our eye off them. The interview I'm about to share with you today is extraordinary. If you haven't heard the story of Kyla Posey or her daughter or her husband in Atlanta at a elementary school, public elementary school in Fulton County, you need to know about it. This is an extraordinary tale of a family, by the way, an African-American family, who was told that their second grade daughter could not go to the class that she wanted because she had to go to, I'm not making this up now, you're going to hear it from her directly, she had to go to the black-only class, the black class. I thought we got out of this 70 years ago. That's what the Civil Rights Movement is. Now we're going back to assigning, I'm not making this up, children to classes based on race, based on identity, making the skin color the predeterminant of what type of education, who they hang out with, who teaches them. This is an extraordinary thing. Now, Kyla Posey, the mom here, very well educated, her husband, a school psychologist in the same school where their daughter was told that she had to go and settle for the black class or be sent there only. Well, they have taken matters in their own hands. They have sued. They are pushing a complaint. They're going to bring justice to this because they are concerned that the trend line that is going on all over the country, but Atlanta becomes one of the ground zeros for it, is that skin color is becoming the predeterminant, the first thing that educators are looking at and then determining the student's fate. That is not what the Constitution allows. You heard what Kimberly said on Monday from the Southeastern Legal Foundation, Kim Ehrman, all about what teachers are saying in Springfield, Missouri. Well, here's a parent in Atlanta having the same experience. These are called culture wars by the media. People have a lot of different names for it. But at the end of the day, this is a larger question about what sort of America we're going to be going forward. Are we going to be an America that uses skin color as the primary and first predeterminant of how the American experience goes down? Or are we going to rely on merit and quality and need and all those things? And when you listen to Kyla Posey, who was so gracious to spend time with me, you're going to hear about retaliation, allegedly. You're going to hear about the mindset of the educators. And here's an important thing. This parent had the prescience of mind to tape record her conversation so that they would be preserved forever. So there could be no denial or flip-flopping or bobbing and weaving. The story of Kyla Posey is such a powerful one. Let's go take a quick commercial break. When we come back, you're going to want to hear this extraordinary, extraordinary story. Hey folks, John Solomon here from John Solomon Reports. I'm proud to be on the iHeartRadio app every day with my podcast, with the news that we bring, the exclusive interviews. And you know what else is great? You can listen to any iHeartRadio station anywhere in the country inside this free app. I used to listen to all sorts of radio on my AM or FM radio. Today, I don't have time to be in the car that often. You know where I listen? I listen on the iHeartRadio app. It's awesome. And they have some really cool new features, unlike anything else in the market. One of them is called Talk Back Mic. Anytime I have something to say, I tap the mic and send my voice message and then listen to hear my voice on one of my favorite shows. Isn't that cool? You can send a message to your favorite disc jockey, your favorite podcast show host. So be sure to download the iHeart app radio. If you don't have it right now, the iHeart Radio app is a winner. Be sure to download the free iHeart Radio app today and start streaming your favorite radio stations, your favorite podcasts, and your favorite music playlists right from the iHeart Radio app. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And I want to take us to Atlanta. We spent a lot of time there this year talking about some of the election things that went on. But there is an extraordinary education story going on. A group of parents literally being persecuted, retributed against because they don't want to see classrooms segregated as some educators in the city are trying to do. And joining us right now is Kyla Posey, whose daughter and whose husband are right at the center of this debate, this storm in Atlanta. It's a remarkable story. Kyla, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John, for having me.
Yeah. When I first heard this story, and it was a friend telling it to me in the newsroom, I'm like, oh, no, this has to be fiction. This can't be true. And then, you know, we dug in at Just the News, and it is so true. I wonder if we could just walk people through what happened. I mean, you send your daughter to school, you think everything's going to be fine, and all of a sudden, you find out there's a different sort of education going on. What happened?
Right. So, unfortunately, it is all true, John. My husband is on staff there at Mary Lynn, and right. The principal allows staff to select their teachers. So, at the end of the school year, I make the educational decision. So, I reached out to her, let her know who our options were, our choices were, and then she reached back out to me to let me know that I would need to select someone different for my second grader. And I was a little bit, confused, didn't understand why. I asked, is she moving or, is she going to a different grade level? And she finally said, no, if you put her in that classroom, there won't be anyone that looks like her there. And I was, again, puzzled. I know my community. I know there's not very many of us.
Right.
However, there should be someone that identifies with her in the class. And I said that to her and she said, well, unfortunately, she said, that's not the black class.
I'm sorry. She literally said that?
She said those were her words. She said that is
not
the class. And I said, what do you mean that's not the black class? Like, what does that mean? I said,
what does that mean?
And she said, yeah, I'm making two classes. She said, I'm putting six in one and five in the other. And if you select the other teacher, she won't have anyone that looks like her. And I told her immediately, I said, that's against the law. Like, you can't do that. And she said, right. No, that's what I'm doing. These are the black classes. And
oh, my gosh.
It was unbelievable. There was this pit in my stomach. And I just kept saying, you just can't do this. You got to spread them out evenly. And she was just like, no,
yeah.
I'm building a community. And I said, well, you didn't tell the community this, and A, and B, it's against, it's against the law. You cannot segregate classes. And she was just dead set on that's what she was going to do. We
Amazing.
Confirmed it with the assistant principal. She let us know that, yes, this was a practice that was happening. So then we were stunned because, again, the principal looks like me. The assistant principal looks like me. And we couldn't understand what was going on at that point. We just stayed adamant and said, no, place our student, with the teacher that's the best fit as a parent.
You're just trying to get the best education for your child.
Correct. I should have the access to all six classes as everyone else in that building. Yeah. So to know that she was limiting that access to black students is concerning. And that she's a veteran educator and she didn't think anything was wrong with it is really
Amazing.
Concerning.
Yeah.
From there, we elevated it to the central office, central district office. They investigated it. They came back, confirmed that, yes, she was doing it. She admitted that she was doing it. because there were other issues, I had been taping all of my conversations because I just didn't trust what the local was doing. And I have all of that on tape with them saying that, yes, that she was doing it. Yes, she admitted to it. And from there, it was just an onslaught of retaliation. She tried to get my husband kicked out of the building. She tried to get my after school program kicked out of the building. She wanted to move his office. And every time the district kept coming back saying, no, you know, she can't do that. You don't have to go anywhere. But it was just constant stress and retaliation. We also had issues with them misidentifying our daughter for the early intervention program, which is directly tied to funding. She was working above grade level at the time. This is a program for students that's working below grade level. When we questioned them about it, they refused to give us the documents, her educational records. We asked them multiple times, the assistant principal, she flat out refused. I only got the documents after I went to the district office. Once I received the documents, they confirmed that my daughter should not have been flagged for this program, which brought up issues.
I want to make sure I understand this. So your daughter is actually outperforming. She's doing well, and they tried to put her into a lower performing program, maybe to get more money, because you get paid differently, right, for students that are in the intervention program. So it's really a financial shell game, right, moving things around, if I understand. Yeah, amazing.
And now we're having, you know, issues with, you know, you have parents that just don't see why it's wrong. You know, they've moved the goalposts. When the story first broke, it was, well, it can't be true. And then when the tapes came out, then it was, oh, well, she had good intentions. Unfortunately, it's against the law. So it doesn't matter what your intentions are. It's against the
law.
Right. Full stop. So now you have the goalposts being moved, and they're still in support of something, which is, it's alarming that in 2021 we're having this discussion, and you think it's okay, and it's scary that you have a group of parents that's willing to say, well, we support her, even though she was breaking the law. It really sets up the community for a bad trajectory.
Oh my God, it's unreal. And again, when I first heard this, they're only the black classes. I said, no one talks that way. It's not possible in the 21st century that someone would talk that way. So especially someone educated and in such an important position as an educator. Where does this go? I mean, first off, let me step back because, you know, obviously you and your husband are well trained and you're doing a good job and you're fighting for them. But if you're a second grader, I guess it's your daughter, right? How does she handle this? I mean, it must be, how do you shield her from some of emotional to all that happens? And how has she been going through this? I mean, it must be as traumatic for her as it is for you guys.
Well, I will say, you know, both my husband and I, between the two of us, we have 6 degrees and over 4 years of experience. So we had to be educational snipe shooters to shoot through all of the stuff that they were telling us because the regular parent wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know.
And for my daughter, we've done a really good job of shielding her of any of this. So we don't have those conversations in her, you know, around her. She goes to school like every other kid and has a good day. And that's what we want for her.
Yeah, you know, that's great to hear.
The adults will have to deal with this. So we have not had that conversation with her. And luckily, there's no one that has had the conversation with her at school. She goes every day.
Great.
She says she has a good day. You know, it's just, it's really concerning that we're here.
Yeah.
But we tried everything. We worked through the district for over a year trying to get them to resolve this in-house so that we didn't get to this point. And at every point, the principal made a bad decision and she continued to retaliate. And, you know, finally I told them, you know, at what point does this stop? Because we can only put up with so much. But you have to tell her to stop retaliating. And they kept trying and she kept doing something different. And they, you know, it was this vicious cycle. And we just said, you know, fine, we're filing a complaint.
Yeah. What is the status of that complaint? I guess it's winding through the legal system, right?
It is. We have filed the official complaint. We have met with the investigators. They will go over all of our information. We've also sent recordings to them to corroborate everything that we've stated. And then from there, they, you know, determine and they send that information, disperse that information after they've made their initial findings.
Yeah, that's an important one. It's such an important case because it feels like we've gone back 50 years in time.
You're correct.
And we're in some sort of time warp. It is remarkable. And for your courage to stand forward and to fight, obviously you know how to work that system because a lot of parents would have been paralyzed or frozen out the first time they got one of the excuses, but you've been able to navigate with such skill that I think we're going to get to the bottom of this, and that's good. I want to step back because you're very learned in this area, and I want to ask just broader. This seems to be part of this movement that started 10 or 20 years ago about identity politics and identity education. You see some campuses that have specific identity dorms now, and there was one earlier this year that literally said white students couldn't go here and black students couldn't go here. Obviously, once it came out, they fixed it. But what is this movement? What is this philosophy? And what are the potential dangers to it for the next generation of our children?
You know, that's an excellent question. I feel like we're setting up a real bad precedence. As you said, going back 50 years, it's setting up the precedence that, you know, everyone's not going to be treated equal. Everyone's not going to be treated fair. And I think that's a dangerous road to go down. And I'm hoping that, you know, with us standing up, because I'll tell you, it's hard to stand up for what's right by yourself because it's alone.
It's very lonely, isn't it?
Really, yeah. Lonely. And, you know, we've been working through the issues with the community, and, you know, there's people on our PTA that I'm on the board at the school that have tried to remove me.
Unbelievable.
For saying what was wrong. Like, I'm a parent. My first job is to advocate for my child first and foremost. And this not only affects my child, but it affects so many more. I hope that through all of this, you know, our community takes, and other communities take, a really good look through the lens, and that we fix it and get it right, because it's a dangerous road to go down when you start branching off and saying one race is better than the other or whatever. It's a slippery slope.
It is. It's never turned out well in history if it was allowed to slide. And I think you're one of the first line defenses of this very important debate. And, you know, I'm certain, because I've been to a lot of schools, there aren't teachers. I don't think teachers and educators are acting maliciously, right? But they have to step back and see that what they're doing is basically creating a new form of racism or a new form of segregation. Somewhere we have to get out of the fog of the war and get these educators to see the potential danger they're doing. And it seems like you're on the forefront of that. If people want to follow what you're doing, or if they have a similar circumstance in their school district, how can they stay in touch with you? And what are some resources that they could draw from as they try to learn how to navigate what you've already successfully navigated?
Sure. I mean, you know, this is all new to me. I'm just a regular mom.
Yep.
You know, I didn't want any of this. I just wanted to do the right thing. But now it's really making me look at, you know, how can I help be a voice? Because there may be a lot of people out there in the same boat that can't find the voice. So, you know, my attorney and I are working on some things to provide and set up so that if there are parents out there that need that support, I can provide some guidance for them as best as possible. But what I will say is parents need to be very vigilant in their students' school life, ask questions. You typically know when it's not right. Your gut tells you.
Yeah, that instinct the parents have, right?
You're right. Your gut's going to tell you that this isn't right. And just reach out, research. I think, you know, us being educators, it made it a lot easier because we immediately knew it was right. We immediately knew where to go. But the fact that they tried it with us, I mean, and I remember staying up at night saying to my husband, of all the kids in the building,
they might have picked the wrong team.
Right. They could have picked any other kid, but they picked ours. And I'm going to fight to the end. Everything's going to be heard. And I think they're getting a dose of that I'm not going anywhere. I meant what I said, and I said I said what I said. Yeah. So I would just, you know, I haven't gotten to a point to where we have all the web addresses for people to reach out. But I will say, if you look, you can find me pretty easily on some of your social media platforms. And there's been parents, community members that have reached out that have tracked me down. I don't know how, but they've tracked me down. And I appreciate all of the kind words. That means a lot, and that keeps me going. And I'm in it for the long haul. And I want all kids to have access, the same access. So I'm here for the long haul. I'm not going anywhere.
That is a good thing. And I could tell you, after we wrote our first story here at Just to Do, thousands of people reacted to it. And we're so grateful that you could come on and personify the story and show us what's really going on. And it is something we're going to stay on top of here. We wish you and your husband and your beautiful children well, because this is an important fight. I know it's about your child personally, but it's about a much larger debate in America. And I think you're inspiring a lot of people to go check their own classrooms and see what's going on. So God bless you, Kyla. This was a really important conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's an honor on our part, please. All right, we'll be right back right after this commercial break. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the John Solomon Reports podcast. This is Sophie Mann of Just the News, and I'm sitting here today with Jen Wilson, the COO of Army Week Association, who's here to talk about a really timely and obviously important and heartbreaking issue, the botched evacuation of Americans and imperiled allied Afghanis in Afghanistan right now, sort of dealing with the bumbling of the Biden administration. But I don't even really want to preface it any more than that. I want to get right into things. Jen, welcome to the podcast. We're really happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. We need all the help we can get.
Yes, of course. So we're glad to do it. So Jen, you are currently spearheading a really interesting and important operation sort of on the ground in Afghanistan. Can you talk a little bit about what Army Week Association is and what you guys are now doing over in Kabul and the surrounding areas as Americans and Afghans struggle to get out in the coming days?
Yes, just quick background on Army Week. I mean, it started with just a friend of mine who's currently in the Army, and it was originally built just to be kind of Fleet Week, but for the Army. And so we spend a week's worth of events focused on the transition space for our soldiers, for their families, children, Gold Star families, and we throw the Army Birthday Gala in New York every year. And so we built that in 2012, and so we've been doing this for, you know, a decade now, and so literally everybody I know served in Iraq or Afghanistan, right? And every single one of them had to have an interpreter. Some of them had dozens. So everybody in my life is intimately impacted by this. And I'll tell you, it became very basal for me. I saw immediately the effect it was having on my guys. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, if I don't get these guys out, I'm going to start losing my guys. We've already lost two to suicide.
Oh, wow.
And it's very basal for me. And so it became, you know, whatever the weekend that Kabul fell, that Friday, it started out kind of small, and it was just a bunch of us kind of working in our own little pockets and our own networks trying to see what we could do. Kabul hadn't yet fallen, but we were already trying to exfil people on commercial flights because the commercial airport side was still open. And once it did fall and it became much more, you know, panic stricken and we've got to get them out now, we all ended up kind of, all of our small little groups ended up kind of converging together and then, you know, this person will put you in contact with this person if you needed this. And then it just kept growing and it kept growing and it kept growing. And everybody, I mean, I know literally no one that has not been able to offer us some level of help. I mean, down to our friends that are just texting us gift cards to feed us, up to, you know, former CIA agents, officers calling us to give us advice on how we can do this and how we can do this and helping us to move guys through the country. I mean, it's become massive, on a very good scale because, you know, last night I get a call at 1:30 in the morning, New York time, that we have 43 Americans, blue U.S. passport Americans, trapped at Abbey Gate, being denied entry by the United States Marines. Now, it's obvious those guys aren't making the decision, but United States Marines are looking into the eyes of Americans and telling them they can't come through.
And what a uniquely American and incredible effort you are sort of discussing in terms of these veterans of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars who are now coming together. Can you talk to us a little bit? I mean, I know this is something that you've mentioned before, but sort of you were talking about the state of your guys and how you've already lost two, which is so tragic. But I mean, so is this sort of there? It seems like veterans of these wars are currently in a really vulnerable emotional state. And this is sort of how they're channeling that productivity, sort of to get their guys back in Afghanistan, you know, the men and women and families thereof that they've worked with out. Is that something that you think we're going to continue to see as this botched effort continues to fail?
Oh, I have no doubt. There will be more loss in the veteran space in the next 6 months than I think we have seen in years to suicide.
Wow.
Because these guys, not only are they dealing with now the weight of, you know, we're right here at 9/11 and the entire country is back in the hands of the guys that they went there to kill and to stop, but they came home with all of their injuries, whether it be mental, emotional, or physical. And they've been bearing the burden of that for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, you know, salt in the wound because we've abandoned their buddy, their battle buddy. Sometimes the battle buddy that literally pulled them out of IED explosions to save their lives. And we can't get them out. And if we can't get them out, we're going to lose our guys because our guys feel like their life can't matter if he loses his.
Mm-hmm. It completely makes sense and is such sort of a tragic next step of all of this. So talk to us a little bit about the details of what you and this network of people are actually doing on the ground in Afghanistan right now. I think as the American public understands it presently, there are still some number of thousands of Americans stranded in Afghanistan. The State Department said just this morning that they had gotten out north of 4,400 Americans, but we still don't have a clear sense of how many are left on the ground there and trying to get back. And that's, of course, in addition to the number of imperiled Afghans who have worked with Western forces over the years. So what are you guys doing on the ground as our own government's ability to get these people out is sort of lacking?
There's kind of multiple beachheads on this. The first one and the most laborious is intaking all of these people. This isn't for the Americans. This is for the Afghan nationals. Intaking all of their forms and their data and putting it into the State Department form, their U.S. Embassy form, the Allied Airlift form, all of these different ones, it is laborious. And if there's one letter, one number off, they don't make it. So the need to be perfect is, you cannot, there is no other option. So that is an enormous lift. And so we have a group that we, as soon as they come in, we just fire them off to this group of people who do all the data entry for us and then start up comms with those guys on the ground to keep them calm and to keep tell them that, you know, because that's half of it also is becoming like a therapist and keeping mm-hmm. them calm and keeping them from being panicked. But then there's a very operational strategic side. And if you think about it, just the United States, we sent 800,000 guys into Afghanistan and women. When I say guys, I just mean American
sure.
soldiers. We sent 800,000 in there. And that's just the military. That's not any of the other agencies or anything. So we have an army here on the ground that does absolutely everything that we needed to do to win that, to win those missions then, to help now. So we have guys that are charting paths. We had a guy driving through early on. We had a guy driving through Kabul, dropping us pins and live location of Taliban checkpoints so that we could then overlay that over Google Maps and track a clean path for our high-value targets to get to either a safe house or to the airport. Like I said, it's multiple beachheads. We've got the data entry side. We've got the very operational strategic side. And then we have some other, there's a lot of special operations forces, nonprofits on the ground that we're working with that have over the years been in Afghanistan and built their own, like, I'll use the word militia for lack of a better term. And we've been using them, working with them to facilitate rally points and escorts in from people that aren't standing at the gates.
Wow.
And then it's just pure shoe leather phone calling, making contacts, getting people on the ground in Hkaya to get to the gate to get our guys. Or I mean, it's nonstop. It's a 24-hour operation because when it's daytime in America, it's nighttime there, and vice versa. So at 11 o'clock at night, the gates are opening and we've got to be constantly on the phone with our guys on the ground. And then when it's daytime here, then we have to be constantly watching the news and working our contacts here.
Yeah, I mean, truly what a mammoth effort on your guys' behalf. I'm sure you've not been getting much sleep for the past 10 days or so. I mean, you know, it's sort of secondary to the point here, but Jen, talk to us a little bit about how you're feeling about the Biden administration's effort as it pertains to this massive evacuation mission. I mean, you know, we've been hearing from sources all week and all morning that people on the ground are just saying that, you know, even if this deadline of August 31st, which it seems like won't be extended, but even if it is extended, it's not clear that everybody's going to be able to get out, Americans and others. What's your take on that?
No, I can tell you there will be no extension, and the last chalk will go out on the 27th of August. There will be no other evacuations coming out of Hkaya on the 27th. It will then, the retrograde has already begun. It will just be plain retrograde from then on, because the deadline is not 31 into 1. The deadline is 30 into 31, midnight 30 into 30. So you lose 24 hours there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
So there will be no more evacuations after the 27th. So we have exactly 36 hours to get these people out.
Wow. It's truly unbelievable. So, I mean, how do you think the administration has been handling this? Is this going to be a stain on its reputation permanently? Or, you know, I think there are a lot of Americans out there sort of uninvolved directly in the way that you are, who are feeling disdain and confusion and sadness about all of this. What's your perception of that?
I think the White House is making a calculated decision that the American people don't care, won't care in 2 or 3 years. So get it over, get the blunder over early in the administration, and we'll move on. We'll, you know, move on to all kinds of other things, COVID and, you know, economic package and all of that. But as it relates to on the ground, I mean, I swear if they step to that podium one more time and say no one's having trouble, Americans aren't having trouble getting to the airport, if they are, contact us or give us their contact information. My God, every time they have the audacity to say that, everybody on my team almost destroys their entire apartment because it's just such a condescending, bold-faced lie. Literally, I got the call when we had 42 Americans trapped last night being denied entry.
Yeah. Yeah, you and not the press secretary. It is interesting. Mm-hmm. No, it is interesting. And again, I think it's rubbing a lot of Americans the wrong way. You've been seeing Joe Biden's numbers simply plummet. So, John, I know that you have so much important work going on. I won't keep you for too long. I just have one more question, which is that to the extent that you were able to talk to us about it, can you tell us a little bit about what your intel is telling you the ground at the Kabul airport looks like right now? I mean, we've been getting a lot of mixed reports, not a whole lot of openness from the Biden administration. But based on, again, your network, what does sort of the ground situation, what's sort of the environment there?
One of our guys, and this is verbatim, he said, Hkaya is zombie world meets the worst humanitarian crisis in history.
Unbelievable.
That's verbatim from a guy inside.
Yeah.
Not from the guys outside. I mean, I'm currently, as we're on the phone, this is what it's like right now. I'm moving a guy right now. So we had to lay Taliban checkpoints again over Google Maps, get him a clean path because they've been hunting him for days now. The reason we had to move him is because there was a 10-vehicle hunt squad caravan circling his position. So we're moving him and we are working with British Special Forces to get him in. And then we have, I've already used that tactic and gotten him in once and had him thrown out. Had him thrown out the other night because of this insane paperwork nonsense that they're doing. I got a man in who gave 17 years to the United States. He joined when he was 17 because he came home one day from school and his mother and his sister didn't have food. And he was like, right, that's it. He stopped going to school to join with the Marine Corps to be a terp and a linguist and intel. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing it with us for 17 years. We went through everything we did to get him in there. Finally, it was a 3-hour exfil to go 20 minutes.
Wow.
And got him in there to have him thrown out within the hour. So this is our last shot. We're trying again one more time.
Yeah. And we so appreciate the effort and everything you guys are doing. Jen, just very quickly before we go, tell us how, everyday Americans and our listeners here can be helping you guys if there is a way.
I mean, at this point, we don't necessarily need the contacts on the ground anymore, the intel on the ground. At this point, what we need is money to help with resettlement.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having to procure cars on the ground to pull them from rally points to HKIA. And those cars get, quote unquote, burned quickly. Mm-hmm. Taliban picks up on what we're doing and we're moving him in this. And so we have to constantly keep getting new cars. So what we need is, if you're not in the military and you don't have someone on the ground that can help us, what we need is money.
Okay. And is there a direct channel that people can access to send that to you guys, or just what is the way that sort of...
Yeah, armyweek.org. Armyweek.org.
Armyweek.org. Okay, everybody hear that? Armyweek.org. If you're interested in learning more about the mission or making a donation, it's armyweek.org. Jen, thank you so much for being with us. Now we'll let you get back to this most important work and hope you'll come back and give us an update when things are a little calmer.
I would love to give you an update. Let's hope it's good, right?
Yes, our fingers are crossed for you. Thanks so much, Jen.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back after a quick commercial break.
Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. All right, folks, that wraps it up for a busy Wednesday. So grateful you tuned in to John Solomon Reports. And I know when you need a moment of news check, when you want to go back and get the facts, find out what's breaking in the news world, you know where to go. JustTheNews.com. Check us out. We got you covered 24/7, both with investigative reporting and breaking news. Thank you for listening. God bless you. And we'll be back tomorrow with another great show. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Folks, we're sponsored today by Donors Trust, the tax-friendly way to preserve your charitable giving. In times of crisis, those with a giving spirit and a desire to build up civil society find ways to be helpful. And that's when it's good to have a charitable resource ready to deploy when they're needed most. Donors Trust offers donor-advised funds or giving accounts. You can use these funds as your own charitable investment account and manage your charitable giving in a way that's smart, tax-advantaged, aligned with your values, and private. Donors Trust clients are using their funds to support charities helping their local communities while also using their giving account to simultaneously support think tanks and liberty-minded organizations that believe our constitutional rights shouldn't get lost in a time of emergency. Now is the time to take a closer look at Donors Trust and join their community of liberty-minded donors by opening a donor advised fund. Go to donorstrust.org/justnews for the ultimate survival guide to charitable giving and learn how a donor advised fund can preserve your ability to give to the charities you love. That's donorstrust.org/justnews.